Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone. What I'd like to do today is give people a bit of an overview with respect to some of the work that we have underway with the use of the unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, as they've become commonly known as it applies to wild blueberry production. And it's always a bit of a challenge just to try to bring people up to speed on what our production system is and where we're located. So just to start things off, with respect to Nova Scotia, we're right on the eastern part of Canada. And when you look at the production areas, it's changed also over the 100 years. We are seeing a bit of a shift north. So where the production, you know, the real heart of the industry is in the state of Maine, over time, with the help of a little bit of global warming, we're seeing a lot of expansion, not only through Nova Scotia, but up in through New Brunswick and especially Quebec. And this is something that's going to continue as time goes on. So what I'll do now is I'll go through the production system with you, give you a bit of an overview of what we're envisioning with respect to the use of the UAV, some preliminary results, as well as some future directions with respect to the UAV. So when you look at our production system, we're managing the fields on a two-year production system. When you're looking at the plant material itself, we're managing native populations. Okay, so nothing's planted. We're managing what's there with respect to pre-existing blueberries that predominantly consist of two different forms. So we have Vaccinium angustifolium, which is a sweet low bush, and then Vaccinium myrtilloides, which is called a sour top, or also known as a Canada blueberry. And the production system itself, the first year after the plants are mowed to a ground level, they grow predominantly vegetatively until approximately the end of July, in which case we'll see floral induction and initiation occurring and ongoing developments of the floral buds, and you can see the flush of them starting at the shoot tip and then working their way down the stem. And the plants will overwinter, and in the cropping year, the second year of production, you'll see these floral buds will start to swell. We have bloom occurring, and followed 65 to 70 days later with the ripening of the berry. And what's a little bit different is all of our berries are once-over mechanical harvested, and over 95% are processed into individually frozen berries, and they're sold globally to over 30 different countries. So it is quite an interesting sector with respect to that. As far as the prior research, one of the things that we really wanted to do, starting approximately 15 years ago, was to try to pull back on the input use, try to maintain that minimalist approach with respect to the production practices that we're using. And so we really put a lot of emphasis on the use of some remote sensing technologies at the time, including the use of a compact airborne spectrographic image analysis system, or the CASI, as it's better known as. It was mounted on the lower side of an aircraft. We were able to get some pretty neat images at the time, but there's all kinds of problems associated with this. First off, the CASI it generated just an unbelievable amount of data. And then how do you actually use it and stitch it in with ongoing imagery to really give you something useful? However, at the end of that particular study, we were able to get some fairly good images of some of the commercial fields that were in play, and it made us realize, look, there is potentially some future use when the technologies catch up, and especially when you start looking at corrections for topography and this sort of thing. So after that, we realized that there's a lot of spatial variation, okay, not only with respect to the soil properties, topographic features, as well as yield as you go across the field. But if you're to characterize across the fields, about 30% of the actual field space is in the form of bare ground. So we have these bare areas that hopefully over time will continue to fill in with these plants. And along with this, then you have some competitive weed pressures that can be problematic in the production cycle. And so overall, when we started finishing up the second phase of research in 2012, 2013, we saw that there is the potential to reduce the chemical use, increase the profitability, and also hopefully reduce the environmental footprint of our production practices. So at the 2012-2013, we had this prototype developed where it had a boom on the front with four optic sensors, and it had little micro-eye cameras, And they were able to then detect the presence of these bare areas. But the problem was processing speed and reliability. We just couldn't cover the ground fast enough for this real-time functioning to be of use to a grower. The reliability just wasn't there. And so in the short term, what we did was we used a weed seeker system to address some of the weed issues. And with our particular geographical location being in a maritime climate, you know, we're now working out in the fields all the way to Christmas. Okay? There's no frost in the ground. And we see some weed pressures, whether it be in the form of fescues or hair cap mosses. They're doing quite well, and they're going to be problematic. So that's really what we envisioned with respect to trying to control things spatially at that time. Now, a couple other developments then happened which really changed the dynamics of things. Okay? And the first was with respect to the presence of the UAVs. So starting around, I believe it was 2013, 2014, some commercial systems came on stream that were really, really looked like they had potential for us. And especially when you look at some of our commercial fields now are well over 300-400 acres, with these systems being able to cover 500 acres a day, a lot more useful data processing and software analysis system, we thought, hey, this is looking pretty good with respect to its usefulness. However, along with this comes some other issues. And so first and foremost is you have to be compliant with the government regulations. And so as a result of that, in our particular case, Transport Canada, they ensure that you have to have training not only for that particular UAV system that you're using, but also you have to be certified with respect to having a pilot license for UAVs. So this was another wrinkle in things that we had to go through. But nonetheless, what we envisioned was, okay, well, let's see how we can map our fields, get a little better idea of where the phenotypes are that are present in the field, the weed pressures, some and then also some phenology. So with respect to the field mapping, this really gives you a good indication of what, when all the images at the end of a day are stitched together, what a particular commercial field will look like. So really, when you look at the flying the field, that's only 20% of the art. 50% of it is the actual post-data or the post-flight processing and being able to pull it all together and start to really get some useful information out of it. And to give you an idea of how this varies across the fields, what we did is we were able, with the use of these particular images, to get a fairly accurate estimate of what the coverage is in a field. And to walk some of these fields, you were sure that there was 99% coverage. But through the use of the UAV, you'll notice that the highest we had with respect to the coverage in the field was only in the low 80s. Okay? So we were really overestimating the plant coverage that we had. The other useful thing is with the blueberry prices all of a sudden taking a dip, what it's allowed us to do is identify those fields with the least amount of coverage, and we're just taking them out of production for the short term. Okay? So this is another use of where this has come in as well. Another interesting feature is with respect to the weed mapping. And when we were out flying the fields and trying to see if we could use the system to estimate berry yield, and you can see it in this particular case, it came through fairly well, with these bluish hues. So in other words, you can get a bit of an idea of where your real high-yielding areas are in the field. What we realized at this particular field was that you could really pick up the goldenrod pressures. So just through some simple color discrimination analysis, we're able to map these on a field map, and then on a go-forward basis, we know where these pressures are, and we can alter our management practices accordingly. Now, most importantly, though, for us, is the phenotype mapping that can occur. And as I mentioned, we have these two species that are present in the field, the diploid, Vaccinium myrtilloides. And what's interesting about it is, historically, it's been the species that's been a little bit lower in yield. However, it's because we're managing the fields a little bit more extensively now, we're seeing the yield potential go up in it. Other interesting feature with it is it's pretty resistant to monolinia blight in our fields. And we're seeing the same thing with botrytis blight. Whereas with angustifolium, it's very susceptible to the presence of these. So when we are trying to map these fields and get a good appreciation on what the actual composition is of the field, I was pretty mad because we had a crash last year of the UAV, and I was really after them. Okay, come on, let's get going. Let's get this thing up in the air. And this was approximately the third week of October when we finally got the UAV back and got it up. And we really didn't anticipate this at the time, but you could just pick out the species. Really, quite astonishing. So anything with a greenish hue that you can see in this particular overhead picture is where our Myrtillodes population is. Whereas when you look then at the angustifolium, in particular this purplish hue, is a form that we call Vaccinium angustifolium foraminagrum, and it's very, very susceptible to not only monolinia blight, but Petritis blossom blight as well. And so the implications of this are pretty pronounced. And so for us, on the monolinia blossom blight period in time, what we're hoping is that we can identify these species present in a map. And with the advantages that are occurring in the sprayer technology, so individual nozzle control on a boom sprayer, on the self-propelled sprayers, we're just not going to spray them. And then similarly, if we can pick up with the drone, and we think we can, the progression with respect to the growth and development of those floral buds, and in particular this, what we call the F2 to F5 stages in their growth and development, which is they're most susceptible to monolinia blight, well, then we can further fine-tune the prescription maps and only apply the fungicides to the area that are at this particular stage. So with our fungicide applications being next to pollination and mechanical harvesting, the most expensive parts of our production system, we think there's some fairly significant gains to be made. And similarly, when you then look at the differences that can occur between the angustifolium and the Myrtillodes with respect to their actually growth and development stages in commercial production, we started mapping this year from April 27th all the way to the end of June with respect to these floral bud progression stages, and there is quite a lag between the angustifolium and the Myrtillodes as well. So one way or the other, through identification of the phenotypes or their growth and development stages with respect to the floral buds, we think this is going to come in and play a pretty significant role with respect to how we're managing these fields. And just to look at the imagery and follow this through, not sure if I skipped one, no. So starting at May 25th, you can see in this particular area, not all the clones have started to really leaf out by any stretch yet. Okay, and so this particular area of the field had a lot of Myrtillodes situated within it. So in an ideal world, this will be something that we won't be spraying, these particular areas. Whereas when you move up to June 9th, you can see how leaf emergence has occurred. Okay, so a little bit farther along with respect to the growth and development. And you can also see then the honeybee hush we had in this particular field. And then by June 13th, it's really coming into leaf quite quickly as well. Okay, and followed by June 27th. So from floral blight management perspective, we think it has some very, very interesting uses with respect to how we're going to be managing these fields. And then also some other interesting features is you can also use the system to get estimates of NDVI, so what the actual vegetation index is in the field as well, which for us, it's going to have some other applications as well. So the immediate uses of the UAV system are, first, we can define where the actual blueberries are, make sure that the field boundaries are okay. We can determine the plant coverage a lot better that we had present in the field. The yield estimation and the topographic features come together quite nicely as well. And future directions that we're seeing include some improved predictive modeling that's going to be occurring in a field, taking into account the growth and development stages, as well as the actual species composition that's present within the field, and then also some stress assessment tools as well. So overall, we're pretty excited, and what it allows us to do is avoid scenarios like this where, left unchecked, you know, your monolinia blight for us, it can just decimate a crop. Okay? So with that in mind, and especially with the advancements in the self-propelled sprayers, with the individual nozzle control that's coming on stream now, we believe that there's definitely some nice advancements occurring. Okay? Now, some cautionary notes. As I mentioned before, to go through the training and the certification requirements is quite laborious. Along with this, as I talked about earlier, you need to have someone with the GIS expertise and the ability to successfully analyze and come up with the prescription maps that are going to be of use to a grower. And then the other factor along with that is boots on the ground are always going to be necessary. So that field level validation to make sure that your models are working properly is going to be essential as well. So the commercial applications for us are already underway. No longer are we applying blanket applications of fungicides to fields. We're starting to only apply it now where the blueberries are located. And the next step then is to really only focus on those phenotypes in the field that are of risk. And then also with respect to the fields that are being brought into development, it's going to be definitely a useful tool with respect to assessing what vegetation is there in the form of the blueberries as well. So what I'd like to do is give the acknowledgements. There's quite a few that has helped us over the course of this research from the Canada Foundation for Innovation as far as providing the infrastructure to those that are listed there, including the Producers Association of Nova Scotia, the Bragg Group of Food Companies, Kanzel and Trimble Agriculture. One last pitch that I'd like to make, completely different note, is we have a vaccinium symposium coming up in Nova Scotia as well as in Prince Edward Island in 2020, and you're cordially invited. More information is going to be coming in the near future, and we hope to see you there. Okay, so with that, thank you.